Today's Perek in Masechet Taharot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Irak Kadesh, is that we begin today the new Perek, the ninth Perek of Masechet Taharot. So just once again to remind you about the din of Hechshem. So no type of food is able to be Mekabel Tumah. I shouldn't really say no type of food, because we saw back in the beginning of the Masechet that Sofo L'Tamei Tumah Chamura would actually be considered, if it's going on its own to be metame other things as an avatuma, then it doesn't need hechsher, even in terms of being mekabel to mekala. That was a special case of nivla sof tahar. So just to put it into context, that was the opening of the Masechet. But here we're talking about things that there's no way that they would ever be metame to mechamur. So you've got some olives. All right. These olives are considered to be a foodstuff, just like anything else that's considered to be a foodstuff, only once it comes in contact with one of the Shiva Mashkin, for which our simon was Yad Dam Shachat. All right. Well, one of the simonim of the Yad Dam Shachat, what do you think that shin stands for heaven's sakes? It stands for Shemen. And that Shemen is Shemen Zayit. So you would think, okay, so if you're dealing with olives, then you've got a built-in hechsher, because any time that you're going to start collecting those olives and putting them in a container, they are already going to start with being ready to be mekabel tumah. Why? Because as you put olives into a container for any length of time, they start to ooze. Now, what they ooze is actually not really oil, because that hasn't been squeezed, but they ooze what is called the muhal, or muhal in the Lashon of the Mishnah. Later it became muhal, which is a liquid that is not really oily, but it's a precursor to the oil that will come out, and it's like a olive exudation from the olive, which, of course, nowadays, when you're buying olive oil, you're lucky to even get that mixed in with a little bit of canola oil and God knows what else, sometimes poison mamish. But all right. So if you want some real olive oil, you better grow them yourselves. But in any event, what you would do, if you do take my advice and grow it yourself, is that then you would put it into a mat'in, which is this container that is waterproof. And the olives sit in there, you pack them in, and now they're under pressure, because it's heavy, there's a lot of olives in there. And olives, of course, because of the fact that they are containing all of the shemen, they begin to oxidize, and they start warming. So this thing gets soft, warm, and squishy. And at that point, you've got this mual that's like really getting out of it, because it's under pressure as well. And now it's ready to be pressed. So now the question is, what is the din of that muhal when it's inside the mat'in and it's been there for a while? Is that enough to be makshir the olives as if it were real shemen? And then it would be considered to be able to be mekabel tumah. Now remember, there's one additional very important clause to all of this. Even if something is exposed to a mashke, it's only if the person either exposed it to the mashke on purpose, or if it was exposed, let's say it rained on it, then it would be with his acceptance and desire that that be the case. And that we learn out from the fact that the way that the Torah describes the din of Hechsher Tumah is with the words ki yutan mayim al zera. Now, yutan, of course, is passive. The water was put onto the seeds. But it's spelt without a vav. So if you read it and you don't know the misora of how to read it, it looks like it says ki yitain mayim al zera. If somebody pours water over the seeds and then it touches something, tamei, so then it will become mekabel tumah. From there, we learn that both are true. Kiyutan means that even if it wasn't involved with your active putting the water on it, it just happened, maybe it rained. But it has to be, even if it's kiyutan, it has to be similar in a sense to kiyitain. Just like ki yitain would mean by definition, if you did the act, that means that there was a will and an acquiescence to the act. So too, even though it came down on its own, it rained on its own, but if you didn't want it to get wet, and it got wet anyway, so then it would not be considered to be mukhshal kabbaltum. Now the question is, we have to take both of those factors into consideration when we're going to define the point at which these damp olives, which are damp with mu'al, first of all, is that mu'al at a stage where it's considered to be real oil, or is it just mu'al bi'alma? Mu'al bi'alma is not one of the Shiva Mashkin. And secondly, are you happy with the situation? Do you want it to have this mu'al on it? Because obviously, if the mu'al is just coming out and it's going to be wasted, and it's never going to become part of the output of the shemen, why would you want it to be leaking its contents? So let's say that it was not in a waterproof container that you put the olives. So then for sure, even if everything was soaking wet with mu'al, and even if mu'al was considered to be shemen, our assumption would be that you don't want it to go to waste. So we'd only be talking about over here if you have a waterproof matain, which is a professional matain, and then we need to know, okay, so then assuming that you're ready for these olives to be mukhshal kabbaltum, now that may be dependent on a number of issues. For instance, let's say you're in the process of the masika, which is the harvest of the olives, and you are working alone. It's taking a long time to do this. And one day you filled your matain up by 20%, let's say, and it's sitting in there. And then you plan tomorrow to be going ahead and putting another 20%. It's going to take you like a week until this thing is full. Now, if these olives start getting squishy before you put in the whole thing, then they're not going to be ready for pressing at the same time, which is not good. So there, for instance, a case like that, you wouldn't want them to start leaking until you have a significant amount of olives in there, until you put in everything you're going to be mosaic. All of these are factors to take into consideration. So let's take a look at our Mishnah now and see how the Mishnah spreads these factors out. So Zeitim. Me'imatai mekablim tuma. So at what point would they be roy for kabbalas tuma, and we would be considering them to be mukhsharim lekabal tuma? Mishiyaziu ze'ata ma'atan. If they have, we're calling this a sweat. The oozing is called like a sweat. So they're sweating this mu'al, and they are in the ma'atan, they're in this waterproof vat, and then that is considered to be mukhshal kabbal tuma, but not if they're sweating in a box of a lo ze'ata kupa. If they're in a non-waterproof box, and it's not going to be able to hold moisture, so then the guy doesn't want this to be happening. He's going to be losing it. And since he doesn't want it, even if you tell me, but it's the same mu'al, isn't it? That doesn't matter, because we also have the din of ki yitain and ki yutan. So that's be ki yutan, dumya to ki yitain. And in this case, I don't want it to be wet at this point, and therefore it's not going to be mukhshal kabbal tuma. So that's one approach, and that's only taking into consideration these things. And that is true, aliba de Beit Shammai. Rabbi Shimon says, now, wait a minute. That's not the whole story, even according to Beit Shammai. Because what is considered to be mu'al is not just any little bit of damp that you'll find on an olive. It's only if it's been there for 3 days. So before they've been inside of that ma'atan for 3 days, that's not considered to be under pressure sufficiently to be thick enough to be viewed as actual shemen. That Beit Shammai would hold, that's nothing. That's just like sweat. And therefore, even if it gets onto those olives, it's not going to be makshir them. So Rabbi Shimon says, you have to add that it's also only going to be called mu'al if it's 3 days in the vat under pressure. Beit Hillel omrim, that's not the point. How long it has been in the vat isn't the issue. The issue is how much the process has actually achieved. So if it's coming out after these olives have been softened enough that they become squishy, and you have mishi yitchabru shlosha zelazeh, so you've got three olives that are now all squished together. You can't really take them apart. They're all one olive, so to speak. Then that means that it's already so soft that what's coming out is as if it was pressed, and then it's considered to be muhal. But it's not a function of the time. It's a function of the pressure and the heat and so on, which we can only see in terms of the impact that it had on the actual contents. Now, if it was actual muhal, according to Beit Shammai, because of 3 days, or according to Beit Hillel, because of three olives, there's still another issue to take into consideration, which Rav Gamliel points out. This is all only true, mishitigamer melachtan. This is where you're not going to be in the middle of doing your masika. But if you're still in the middle of working, you don't want the first olive to start getting so soft and damp, because then you're not going to have one thing to squeeze. They're going to be different stages. So therefore, it would not be his desire, and it's not ki yutan dum yad ki yitain, because he doesn't want it to be this way. And the Chachamim agreed to that. He's being masbir all of the shitas. Not this is a third shita. So when Rabbi Gamliel came along and he added another consideration, which is the ki yitain consideration. So it turns out that we have a machlokas about what muhal is. It's contextual in the sense that it has to be in a situation where it was tigamer melachto, and it has to be in a situation where it's not going to go to waste. So it's not in a box of some kind that's not waterproof. It's in an actual matah. Perek, tes, mishnah, beit. Gomar milim sok. So suppose the guy was gomer melachto. You think that Rabbi Gamliel means that it's all a function of where he finishes his own work. Suppose a guy's got a few olive trees. He doesn't even have enough olives to be able to fill up a ma'atan. So he usually goes to Machane Yehuda. He buys some olives and he adds them to his ma'atan so that he can get a decent yield. First of all, he wants that pressure, which requires a weight of a certain number of olives. And he's going to go and he's going to add them to his ma'atan. Or maybe he already did that, but he didn't get enough. So what he's planning to do is to ask some neighbors whether they would be willing to lend him some olives. And in exchange, he'll give them back some olive oil from those olives. Or how about in a case where he was going to put in the olives and then something happened to him? Maybe someone in the family died, so he wasn't able to continue working. Or maybe somebody got married and he had to break for making a wedding. Or some other onus happened to him and he would have liked to add the olives and he wasn't able to. So in that case, even though there's a number of days between them, he's still not considered to be gomer melachto. And because of that, even if it was leaking, and even if zavim v'zavot ma'alchin aleihem, you can have the most chomer tumah walking all over these olives, and makes absolutely no difference, because even with all of that semi-oil on them, they're soaking wet, and you have these barefoot zavim and zavos are walking over the olives, completely kosher, even for the Beis HaMikdash, no problem, because without hechsher, there's no Tumas Ochlin. Naflu alayim mashkim tameim. Now, how about if another thing falls on them that is considered to be a mashke? Not necessarily shemen, any one of the shiva mashke. So let's say that we had some water that fell on it, you know, or maybe some honey. So what happens over there, if the mashkim that falls on these olives is itself tameim, then only those olives which had actually touched the tumah are going to become tameh. Because even though this other stuff may actually be machshir then, and this other stuff is tameh, and it will make the olives tameh, but it won't spread to any other olives, because the other olives are still in their state of pre-hechsher, the tumah, because he was going to continue working on them. So it's only the actual olives that were touched that would possibly be tummy. And even if all the other olives are touching these tummy olives, they themselves cannot become tummy. So you have to be very clear that There's still, no matter what, and you have things that are mixing it, it doesn't matter. And what's more, the olives that were not part of a finished product, because he was still planning on adding to them, any mocha that is yotzi mihem is tahor. Forget about the fact that the mohal in this case is not going to be makshid the olives, but it cannot become tameh itself either, even if it comes directly into touch with something that's tameh. So therefore, the mohal that would be coming from the olives that are still in a state of not gemar melacha, it remains tahar. Once, says Mishnah Gimel, Perek Tes Mishnah Gimel. Oh, I forgot to press record. Okay. Once Nigmara Malaktan, so once it's finished, and he already put in all the olives that he wants, and we have this mocha, either with 3 days or with 3 squishes, Elum Bukhsharim, so then it's all ready to be Makabal Tumah. And in this case, if some honey that was tameh fell on one of these olives, the whole vat becomes tameh. Nafu Aleim Mashkim, Timeim, that's because the olive mochal that was inside of the matan itself becomes tameh, and that touches all of the olives, so that makes all of the olives tameh. And therefore, there's no question at all. So far we've been talking about taking for granted the shitas that we have in Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, that mochal, under the correct circumstances, is considered to be an actual mashka. However, it turns out that Rebbe Eliezer holds that mochal hayotze mihem. If you've got olives that have been inside of the matan, according to him, we never look at mochal as being actual shemen. And he disagrees with the entire idea. Only pressed olives are oil producing. Non-pressed olives are not oil producing. And therefore, Rebbe Eliezer's mitaher, even though it was gemar malachtam, as long as you didn't press them, that particular oozing liquid that comes out is not considered to be the shemen of the shiva hamashkin. It's the chachamim or mitam of them, and only then could it be machshir, and only then could it be mekabel tuma. Omar Rebbe Shimon, no. And that's not the machlokas between Rebbe Eliezer and the chachamim. Nobody argued about this issue. Lo nechleko al hamocha al hayotze min hazeitim shu tahor. Even the Chachamim agreed that that's never considered to be a machshir. Hama nechleku. So that the only machlokas that they had was where you have mocha that's yotze min habor. So a bor is after you've already pressed the olives. And now the oil pours out into the pit where the oil is stored until things settle, and then you're able to take the oil out and bottle it. So after you do that, obviously what you have over there is any semi-oily things, the oil will always rise to the top. So if it's like a liquidy, more water content, the oil is going to rise to the top. And at the bottom of the bor, there's always going to be a low quality leftover watery substance, which is a type of mochal. However, over there, there's no way to get rid of the real shemen that mixes. There's always going to be like drops of shemen that's in there, except that it's got much more, it's not as vicus as normal olive oil. That's what they were talking about. Rebbe Eliezer says that even this, which has in it actual pieces of shemen zayit, even that is tahor. And the chachamim, in that case, since in this case it's after the pressing of the olives and there's really some actual olive oil in it, that is what they were talking about. Everybody would be viewing that as actual shemen. This is the way I understand the machlokes between the chachamim and Rebbe Eliezer. Okay, in any event, what we paskin is that it's considered to be like Beit Hillel, it's considered to be oil. We even remember the big machlokes about whether if you put it into your basket, is that considered to be machshir the kabel tuma, and Beit Hillel agreeing in the end. Okay, but we'll be getting to all of those details later, Bezrat Hashem, And that concludes our Mishnayos v'Taharos for this morning. I would say I look forward to tomorrow morning, but we don't do the I do look forward to tomorrow morning, Alavai, but I don't think we're going to be doing any Taharos. But I want to remind you, please, do post your Ha'oras, because our new Seder has our postings on Thursday. Late is the last time to post and still be sure that there'll be time to take it into consideration. So, Bezrat Hashem, get on the document that has been sitting there and waiting for your Ha'oras and looks all too blank to me. So, that I hope to see. Kol Tov, have a wonderful day, and Besirot Tovot, Yishuot V'Nechamot.